I'd like to ask an interest in your prayers as we look into some of the Word for a few minutes today. The burden I have on my heart is, I am that I am. Now, when I was in school, I learned that there are state of being verbs. Is, am, are, was, were, be, being, been. It's a state of existence. And as I was reading and considering this, and the Lord gave me this little burden, He brought to my mind the time when Moses was being visited by God about delivering the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. And in Exodus chapter 3, I'll read a couple of verses here, verses 13 and 14. Exodus 3, 13 and 14. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come to the children of Israel, and say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, hath sent me unto you. I was rather intrigued by hearing the words that the Lord told Moses what to say, that his name was, I am that I am. It's a state of existence. It is not something that is to be lightly glossed over. It is something that means much more, I think, than we realize. He says, I am. And this God that you and I serve is the I am God. He's not like the gods of the Egyptians or other false gods. And as we get into this little burden today, I hope that we can paint a contrast for you and help us to understand that when we're praying to this God, this I am God, we're not praying to a false God. We're not praying to a God who is a figment of imagination. I think of different things that people, I don't say necessarily fantasize about, but there are some who, you've heard of Bigfoot and Sasquatch. There are people who spend time, a lot of time in their lives, looking for Sasquatch or looking for the Bigfoot. And most of the images that you see, if you see an image, is one from a long distance. It's very grainy, almost impossible to make out. It shows this, what looks like a, I don't know, ape-like creature standing upright, walking along. But there's no real, no detail. You can't see any detail because it's a very poor video or photograph. Another is a Loch Ness Monster. You know, that people have said that that's real and it exists, but no one has actually seen it except for the one famous photograph that you see of something in the water that's, again, very grainy, no detail to it, hard to make out. But people fantasize and they like to think about these kind of things as being real and in existence. But in my opinion, whether or not these kind of things exist is kind of insignificant. But what is real is that we serve this God, this I am God, who has shown himself over the years, the centuries, with his people to be one who is fully capable of coming on the scene, even though he is not visibly seen. He is capable of coming on the scene and making changes to cause there to be disruption in normal activity. We have to realize that this God is a supernatural God. He is not bound by the things of nature. He is the one that created it all. He created time, if you will. He created the laws of nature, the bounds of nature. He tells us in the book of Job how he sets the sea to go to a certain place and no further. And all those things are set by intelligent design and by this great God that you and I serve. So this I am God, this I am that I am, the name that he gave himself to tell Moses, you tell our fathers, you tell them that the God of your fathers has sent me to you and his name is I am. Now, remember that when Moses went to Pharaoh and he started doing the different, all the different signs to show that there was a true God, Pharaoh had magicians who would also come on the scene and either counter or do these marvelous works also. But there was a time when the Lord sent plagues to the land of Egypt. And when he sent these plagues to the land of Egypt, these plagues were against the very gods of Egypt. And they challenged those gods. And the I Am God was leading up to a place where he was showing himself as being the one who had mastery over all of these supposed gods that the Egyptians trusted in. And so the Egyptians and the false gods of all the humanity up until even today, they really can't prove that their God exists. In the Apocrypha, which is not a, it's some of the old scriptures, and some were not accepted as it being a part of the canon, but there's one called Bel and the Dragon, a book called Bel and the Dragon, where there is supposedly something that comes up, this God that comes up and eats all the sacrifices that the priests bring to this God every day. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was Daniel, Belteshazzar, and he was telling the king that your God is not a real God. And he said, the king argued with him. He said, well, I'll show you what has taken place and let me tell you what I can do here. So whenever the Lord spoke to Daniel about this, and Daniel was trying to prove to him what was taking place, he said, let's put out all of these offerings and sacrifices to your God, and then let's spread flour all over the floor, and we'll come back tomorrow and we'll see just what's taking place. Well, they put out those sacrifices, those offerings to the gods, put the flour all over the floor, came back the next morning, and guess what they found? They found many footprints leading to a trap door that led down to a basement area where these, supposed priests lived, and they are the ones who came up and took those sacrifices and consumed them. And it was supposedly that the gods were taking those, the God was taking those sacrifices and consuming them. And the king was furious when he found out what was taking place, that he had been deceived. So these things that you and I consider in this world we live in, folks, there are many, many false gods, but there is one true God, the I Am God. Now I'd like to turn to the book of Daniel, and we'll go to chapter 3, Daniel chapter 3. We'll pick up reading a few verses here. About verse 15 is where we'll start. Nebuchadnezzar had made an image in the plain, and he had given instruction for everyone, when they heard the music, to fall down and worship this image that he had set up. Well, there were three, of course, you remember, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who refused to bow down. So we'll pick up at verse 15 of chapter 3 in Daniel. Now, if you be ready that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made. Well, but if ye worship not, ye shall be cast the same hour into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Notice this question. Who is that God? Who is the one that's going to deliver you out of my hands. You see, I've made this image. You will fall down and worship it. You will give obeisance to it. You will acknowledge what I have done. And when you decide, if you decide not to do it, who is the one that's going to deliver you out of my hands? Well, let's see. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded they should heat the furnace one 7 times more than it was wont to be heated. And he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hose, and their hats, their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonished, and rose up in haste and spake and said to his counselors, did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of fire? They answered and said unto the king, true, O king. He answered and said, lo, I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, ye servants of the Most High God, come forth and come hither. Then they came forth out of the midst of the fire, and the princes, governors, and captains, and the king's counselors being gathered together saw these men, upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was an hair of their head singed, neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire had passed on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him, and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies, that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own. Now you see, Nebuchadnezzar was acting as a god. Who's going to deliver you out of my hand? He was acting as though he had complete authority, all authority, only to be shown the superiority of the I am God, the real God. You see, this image in the plain of Dura represented a figment of Nebuchadnezzar's imagination of power, authority, and might. But his power was dwarfed by the true I am God. Oh, how desperately we ought to serve this I am God, a state of existence. He is. When he gave Moses the instructions to give that name, I am that I am, folks, that is a powerful, powerful statement that he made to Moses that day. And it was to be a powerful statement to the Hebrews. I am that I am. You tell them that the I am has sent me. Now let's go to another little experience in the book of Daniel, where Daniel in the lion's den. This we pick up in chapter 6, verse 20. You remember the occasion here. The king's counselors despised Daniel, and they devised a plan to get rid of him. And they came to the king, King Darius, I believe was his name. And they said, O king, live forever. We have something we want to present to you. We want to glorify you and magnify your name. We're going to ask you to sign a petition that we think is very gives obeisance to you, that any man who asks any petition of any God except for you, O King, will be thrown into the den of lions. So the king, hearing that decree, and of course having the typical human tendencies, wanted himself to be lifted up. So he was willing to sign the decree. But he had forgotten about one man named Daniel. So in chapter 6, verse 20, book of Daniel, it says that, well, we'll back up just a little bit, that the king, when he heard the writing, and then the counselors came to him and told him that this man Daniel disregards the law that you have written of the Medes and the Persians, and it can't be changed. So what are we going to do about this man? What are we going to do to fix this problem? He has to be cast into the lion's den. Then Darius the king realized that he had been snookered, and he lamented that he had signed the law, but because it was the Medes and the Persians' law and it couldn't be altered, he had to go along with it. So he was very disturbed, very upset. They cast Daniel in the lion's den. All night long the king fasted. He was miserable. No music. Didn't want anything. Nothing could calm his nerves. But early the next day, early, in 6:20, and when he came to the den, this is the king, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God. You hear this? Servant of the living God. Is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lions? Question mark. Is he able to deliver you from these lions, these beasts? Then said Daniel unto the king, O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel and has shut the lions' mouths that they have not hurt me. For as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. Now just a little bit further here we read that the king caused all those counselors and their families to be thrown in that lion's den, and things were different then. The lions had mastery over them, and it's kind of a gruesome picture if you think about it. It says they broke their bones, they took total control, they had the mastery of those who were thrown in that den, but not on Daniel. Because you see, the I am God, the servant of the living God. Darius made the distinction, a servant of the living God. Is this God that you serve able to deliver you from the lions? Now another occasion we find here in the book of Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar, well, there's no question, was a mighty man and had a mighty kingdom and had great wonders in his kingdom. But he was a little bit inflated in his mind, and he had a dream. He had a dream where there was a watcher that came down from the sky, and a tree, a great tree, was there, and the watcher hewed down the tree but left the stump. And after 7 years passed over, that the stump grew again into a tree. And he called for Daniel to give him an interpretation of this dream. And Daniel was troubled over it. But the king finally said to Daniel, he called him Belteshazzar. And he said to Belteshazzar, don't be afraid to answer. Give the interpretation of the dream. He said, I want to know what this means. Well, Daniel said, King, may this dream be to your enemies and to those that hate you. But here's what the dream means. You, King, are a great king. This tree, you are represented by this tree. You give shade, you give comfort, you give place for people to live, the birds nest in the branches, you've made a wonderful kingdom, but you have to remember who the true God is that gave you this ability. And when you saw the watcher come down from heaven and hew down the tree, would leave the stump until seven times passed over it, O king, your kingdom is going to be taken away from you. You're going to be driven into the woods. You're going to eat grass in the field like an ox. And it's hard to imagine that something like this could take place to a human being, but it did to Nebuchadnezzar. And Daniel said, O king, let it be a lengthening of thy tranquility. Acknowledge God. Turn from this way that you have in your mind of yourself and recognize the one true God. Well, you remember the story. There was one day Nebuchadnezzar was walking in his palace gardens and he looked around and he was just overcome by the magnificence of it all. Is not this great Babylon which I have built? I have done this. I have done that. And it says in the same hour, a voice from heaven came and gave the proclamation. And Nebuchadnezzar lost his mind and he was driven from humanity into the fields like a wild beast. The scripture says that his hair became like eagle's feathers, or it was mangled up and it was unkempt, and his nails grew like claws. And it's hard to imagine such a thing could happen to a man, but it did to him, because there was a decree given by the I am God, the one who has power and authority over this man Nebuchadnezzar. Now, I'd like to turn now to 1 Kings chapter 18. 1 Kings chapter 18, and pick up reading about verse 25. This is a story we're very familiar with. Elijah and the prophets of Baal. You know what had taken place. Elijah had said there would be no rain or dew. And now there is this confrontation between the God of Elijah and the God Baal. So in verse 25, 1 Kings chapter 18, we pick up reading. Elijah said unto the prophets of Baal, choose you one bullock for yourselves and dress it first, for you are many. And call on the name of your gods, and put no fire under. And they took the bullock which was given them, and they dressed it, and called on the name of Baal from morning even until noon, saying, Baal, hear us. O Baal, hear us. But there was no voice, nor any that answered. And they leaped upon the altar which was made. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud. For he is a God. Either he's talking or pursuing, or he's in a journey, or maybe he's asleep and must be waked. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their manner with knives and lancets till the blood gushed out upon them. And it came to pass when midday was past that they prophesied until the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that there was neither voice nor any to answer, nor any that regarded. It's no wonder, folks, because they weren't calling on a true God. They were calling on a false God. Now, when Elijah gave the instruction, he said, come near to me. And Elijah was putting it all on the line with this I am God. And he built his altar, dressed his sacrifice, placed it on the wood, had him pour water on the sacrifice till it filled the trenches around the altar. And then he cried out to God, the I am God, the self-existent one, the one that says, I am that I am. I exist, a state of being. I'm not like Loch Ness. I'm not like Bigfoot. I'm not like Sasquatch. I exist. I am real. Even though you don't see me in a physical form, I am God. So when Elijah prayed, fire came down from heaven and consumed that sacrifice, completely consumed it. The stones licked up the water in the ditches, everything. Now, I want us to turn now to the New Testament and remember what some of the things that Jesus said. I'd like to pick up in the book of John, chapter 14. John chapter 14. And we'll read verse 6. But this is Jesus' words. He says to the folks here in his audience, Jesus saith unto them, I am the way, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. He says, I am. Remember this, folks. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. In the first chapter of the book of John, in the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. I am, Jesus said. I have always existed. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. Now back up a couple of chapters in chapter 11 of John here. Let's read a little occasion where Jesus is having a conversation with Martha after Lazarus' death. They said to her, to Jesus, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother hadn't died. And he said to her in verse 23, thy brother shall rise again. Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said unto her, I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. I am the resurrection. Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful story that comes from the mouth of the Master. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the resurrection. How beautiful, folks. Remember, we are serving the I am God. All right. Now let's look at this in closing here. I'd like to turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 7. After Jesus was closing out his Sermon on the Mount, some pretty amazing words here, and it's no wonder that the people saw him in this light. Matthew, chapter 7. Verses 28 and 29. And it came to pass, when Jesus had ended these sayings, the people were astonished at his doctrine, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as the scribes. He was different than the scribes and the Pharisees. He said, the scribes and Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Whatever they tell you to do, you do. But don't do as they do. They've given you the law, but don't do as they do. But Jesus taught them as one having authority. The people looked and listened and they said, this is different. We've not heard anything like this, quite like this before. Well, there's no wonder, because it was coming from the mouth of the I am God, the existent one, a state of being, one who actually was God, not just a man representing God. In Revelation 22, as we close, Revelation 22, verse 13, Jesus says this, I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, the first and the last. In other words, I am from eternity to eternity, the beginning and the ending. As Aleph or Alpha was the beginning of the alphabet, so I'm the author and the cause of all things. And as Tau or Omega is the end or last letter of the alphabet, so I am the ending of all things, the destroyer as well as the establisher of all things. Folks, you and I serve a wonderful God. We serve a God who is alive. We serve a God who is in existence. Not a figment of imagination, not some paranormal thing, but he is a supernatural, all-living, all-powerful God. Jesus said, I am the resurrection. I am the truth. I am the way. I am the life. He is all of those things. And when we come to places where we're in desperate situation, there is a God who is a self-existent one that can be called upon, who is able to change circumstances and make a difference in your life and in mine. May we understand and may we acknowledge who this true I Am God is and serve him and worship him and honor him. I assure you that if you will put your heart in mind to worship him, that when you come to desperate places, he will be there for you. He'll be there to answer your prayer. He will give you grace, courage, strength, above and beyond what humanity is capable of dealing with. God will give you what you need. I appreciate your time and attention today. May God bless each one of you as we serve this I Am God. Remember, he brings us hope of eternity. And not only eternity, but he brings us hope in this life. Because he is an existing, I am, state of being, God. God bless each one is my prayer. Amen.